Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 56th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. So today I'm really excited to be sharing a conversation with the legendary artist and zine maker and musician and creator of the Next World Tarot deck, Christy Rode. It was such an honor to be able to speak with her. Her work is so important. Her tarot deck in these times is so necessary. And before we get into the conversation and some of the updates, I just want to take a moment and sit in silence with the weight of the heaviness of everything, just to acknowledge the people that have died at the hands of the police and at the hands of the state, not only since the death of George Floyd during the uprising, but also throughout our history. And I also want to send lots of love and protection out to all the frontline organizers and activists and folks that are putting their life on the line for justice. In moments of silence such as this, I feel like I can will my heart to expand outward and take on some of what is happening in the world, and it can increase my ability to be empathic and intuitive. And I've been working all weekend with mugwort and yarrow that I ordered from Steadfast Herbs, processing it for a new batch of mugwort and magic and for crown rinses for my own energetic protection. In my windowsill, I'm growing some marigolds that I'm hoping to make an essence with sometime in the next week when I have a quiet moment to myself. And I'm working with ferns as protection, and feeling really connected to the desert right now. It's about 105 degrees today. I turn off my air conditioner to record, and just bowing to the world and my humble existence within it. So I've been really busy teaching tarot summer school. There's one more session. There's still a few spots left. It's more than halfway full now. If you're interested in signing up, I have a couple of scholarship spots left. Those are for BIPOC and Black folks to the front, as always. You can also, if you're a BIPOC organizer, frontliner, you can contact me about getting some free medicine. Or pay what you can medicine also. So I'm holding a lot of space for that. Just started up a mutual aid organizing network here in the high desert to serve the high desert Morongo Basin and Coachella Valley. And that's also prioritizing BIPOC, undocumented folks, etc. So yeah, my time has been well spent. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for community, and I'm grateful that I just have the opportunity to be here and to watch as we move towards a movement for abolition that is global, that is reaching all corners of the country and has so much heart in it and so much history. And I'm really bowing to that too. So I don't want to take up too much time. I want to get right into this conversation. I think Christy Rode is just such an amazing person and an amazing storyteller, and it's like great to be able to hear some of her stories. If you enjoy this podcast, I just want to remind everyone, please rate and review on iTunes. I've gotten some really amazing reviews lately. My heart swells. I'm so happy. It's so cool that people resonate with this work. Rating and reviewing does help it get out to more people. And yeah, it's for like a small DIY podcast like this. It's really important to know that this message is reaching people and people are resonating with it. And if you have the money to show support for the podcast, that is always really appreciated. You can go to www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch and a pledge of $5 a month is really helpful in sustaining this work. It also gets you a 20% discount in the apothecary, and you'll be the first to know when I do tarot readings again. I have a lot to catch up on still, and I'm just really grounding myself in the importance of doing this movement work, mutual aid organizing, making accessible herbal medicine for folks that need it in these times, battling systemic racism, battling police brutality, and, you know, a borderline fascist state right now. So when I do get back to doing tarot, my patrons will be the first that have dibs on that. So if you're interested, I also just came out with a zine with a few of my Plant Witch mentees, and you can order that on the website. I'll have a link in the show notes. So long live making zines, creating zines, DIY media. And yeah, of course, I would like to say if you are a white person or a person that benefits from white privilege, please prioritize giving your money away to Black folks and to BIPOC organizers in these times. But if you have that extra $5, also investing it in the sustainability of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast is super awesome and appreciated. So check that out. I'll have the link in the show notes. And yeah, go check out Christy Rhodes' work. And if you're learning tarot or you're an experienced tarot reader and you haven't got Next World Tarot yet, check it out. Order it. I think you can still order it from her shop. There's a lot of art prints there. It's still at a lot of different stores, but it's a really pertinent set of images. It's a really pertinent deck for the times that we're currently living in. So thank you again for being here, beautiful listeners, and I hope you enjoy this conversation.
Hi, I'm here today with Christy Rhode. Christy, welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch.
Hey. Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So for folks that aren't familiar with your work, do you want to just like give a little bit of background about who you are, what you do, et cetera?
Yeah, my name's Christy Rhode. I started my art career life in the mid-90s. I started a fanzine. It was called The Green Zine. It was all about Green Day. And then it just kind of snowballed into being about punk rock and just kind of the kind of conversations and topics that were really exciting to hear about and talk about in punk rock, specifically at the time. This is 97, 98. So hearing queer core bands and hearing feminist bands and stuff like that was really exciting, which I learned from the Green Day love. On their Dookie tour, they brought Pansy Division on tour. And I just learned about queer core and just the whole concept of there being queerness and feminism and punk. And so, but aside from that, it was my favorite music and my favorite place to just be out and be myself and be comfortable. So my whole kind of, just everything I did was for the punk rock community and for elevating the punk rock community. And my whole zine was all about that. And then around the late 90s, early 2000s, I was, I started writing more about my personal experiences with abusive relationships and seeing all these other writers, particularly Cindy Crabb, who wrote Doris, seeing all these other writers and, you know, narratives on abuse and Riot Girl community and music. It just inspired me or made me feel safe to tell my story because I was calling out dudes in my community who were respected and in bands that people liked. And so I was, you know, really scared to come out with these ideas, but I did. And this is a 2001. And yeah, and I think that just like the whole struggle to tell that story kind of kept me underground, but I didn't care because I was punk and that was, you know, that was my identity. And, you know, the idea of like compromising the story I want to tell for money, for a mainstream publisher, for anything like that just seemed ludicrous and like I was selling my soul. And, you know, I'm always, you know, like my zine was about Green Day. I'm all about, you know, taking the money if it's not asking you to compromise what you want to say. And I think that was my problem with punk and why I wrote the zine in the first place, because I didn't like the way punk kind of told people what to do with their money, told poor people what to do with their money. I thought that was stupid. So I wrote a zine about it, and yeah, but then, you know, life happens and I realized like, oh shit, I actually really need punk because I'm not going to get, you know, record deals or publisher deals, for the stories that I want to tell. And so, yeah, I just kind of just let my career grow organically. And the times I did connect with more mainstream outlets or publishers or even distributors, like it's all been this organic growth. after finishing the Green Zine, I started publishing books. I wanted them to have, you know, ISBN numbers. I wanted them to be available at libraries, available to people outside the DIY punk world. And so, yeah, after that I did Indestructible and Bad Habits and Spam Passion, and all of them are on indie presses. And I did have an agent that I met through one of the more like career opening experiences, the Sister Spit Tour of 2007. Which was all queer author tour. But it just, you know, put me on the road with like Eileen Miles and Michelle T and just these people who had been publishing forever and were, you know, very high profile and speaking at colleges and stuff like that. And I was 24 at the time, but I was working on my second novel. And, you know, I was just like this weird, like, I've always just had way too many feelings. I've always just needed to make stuff, and living off of it was never the goal. Like, I always just had jobs. I always had cocktailing jobs or teaching jobs. I went to grad school and undergrad. And, you know, I've just always been like, well, capital, I will survive in capitalism, so might as well figure out jobs. And that has nothing to do with figuring out, you know, my voice as an artist. So I always just, you know, do what I love and worry about money later. And my last project after the last memoir I did, Spit and Passion, was The Next World Tarot. And yeah, that's every project I've done has kind of given me a whole different experience. So I won't get deep into that because it's a lot to deconstruct. But overall, I think that's always just where I'm coming from, the need to tell, you know, the stories that people don't want to hear, because everything's always too intersectional, you know. I remember trying to sell different books about either queerness or surviving from sexual violence, where the people trying to buy it were like, but is this a book about... is this going to be a book about your culture, or is this going to be a book about Green Day, or is this going to be a book about sexuals? I don't understand. And that's the problem with capitalism. It kind of rejects intersectional narratives because they alienate people who aren't at those intersections. And in my case, it would be alienating straight white men and not caring about their money, which... you know, a lot of institutions don't really want to deal with because they want that straight white man money. And I understand, it's fine, but look at me now.
That's awesome. I love that. It's, yeah, you did, you know, and like I told you before, we met like 19 years ago. You totally don't remember me. I'm totally fine with that. But it was like 19 years ago at a zine fest. And I just think like your work is so amazing just in that. I feel like in the late 90s and in the 90s in general, there was like a big push to like call out a lot of misogyny and violence that replicates patriarchal violence within punk communities. And that came from like the Riot Grrrl movement. And in it was written about in a lot of zines. So I think your work has been really important in that. And I love that you're anti-capitalist and that you don't care about straight white men's money. And I'm really curious to hear about, like, kind of your transition from, like, being a zine maker and a writer, although I know you still are those things, to, like, a tarot deck creator.
Well, that also just feels like this very organic transition from one kind of project to the next. I've always done a lot of stuff. Like, I've always played music, and it's, and when people try to kind of read into the two different, like, visual art versus music, it's kind of always, it's like the same, it's all the same story, and it's the same politics. And with the tarot deck, it's similar to everything, because it is this kind of like homage to my community or communities that I've been a part of. And everybody in the deck has been a friend, or there's a few people like Jenny Set Gutierrez, who is an activist, and she's the messenger card, the Hierophant in traditional decks. And she's one of the few people that I saw her speak. And after she was done, I was like, can you be in my tarot deck? Let me draw you. And she posed for me speaking, because I didn't get any good photos during the lecture. But other than that, there just isn't that many that were like that. I like that story, because it was like I was fangirling, as they like to call it. And but otherwise, most of the people on the deck are friends or people in my life who have just really impacted me and my choices. And so the deck started as this commission from Michelle T, who was on the Sister Spit tour. And she was like, oh, I would love it if you illustrated my deck, that I want to write a deck. And I thought it was a cool commission. Like, that's how I thought of it, as a commission, because I didn't really think of myself as spiritual at the time. This was in 2007. And I always liked getting tarot card readings. Like, it's not that I didn't believe in ancestral magic or just these other realms of knowledge and existence, because I've always known, you know, as an anarchist, as a punk, I always hated that people didn't realize that astrology and just the ability to talk to spirits and the ability to talk to ancestors, for example, and the knowledge of past lives, like, all that stuff is real, and it was destroyed by colonization. And so all these punks that are like, no gods, but they're like, anarchy, like, no capitalism either. It's like they're kind of they're just kind of cutting off the world before colonization, like this world that was very spiritual before, you know, people like Jesus Christ got kind of turned into these martyrs, marketable martyrs, if anything. And just kind of, yeah, so I've always been very respectful of magic, pretty much, is what I'm saying. And it was always like not a popular conversation in the punk scene, unless if you were in the queer punk scene, where everybody was into astrology and like the Riot Girl scene, and, you know, just like feminist communities where these feminist histories of witches are elevated and celebrated. And so it's like, you know, you don't need to like follow astrology. But there's just certain things that are about nature, and they're about celestial bodies, and they're not really about structured religion or, you know, God, or, you know, I just feel like it was very hard for me to feel connected to making the deck, because I just came from this long history of like focusing on revolution and activism and like cutting off the spiritual aspect. But then every time I would be, like I said, around these queer communities or feminist communities, and people were more spiritual and people were talking about ancestral magic and cultural magic and even, you know, exchanging palm readings and tarot readings, that kind of made me feel like entitled to the project, but not really knowledgeable of it. So after, you know, after debating for a while, I was just kind of like, all right, I'll do it. This sounds like it'll be really fun. I'm just going to draw a bunch of queer punks. It's going to be really cool. And I just started it. And in that time period of starting it, all these, you know, crappy things happened in my life, like from, you know, breakup that turned me into like a sad, checked out, sad mess with who was self-harming a lot. And just, I was just in a very dark place, and I didn't really see the value of my work at all. And like Spam Passion was released, and there, I had a release event at the Brooklyn Museum, and I just did not care. All I cared about was getting back together with my ex, and all I cared about was companionship and family. And it was my Saturn return, and Saturn in Libra. So it was just this time of feeling like, well, if I don't have companionship, I'm not worth life. I'm not worth any of this. So I really needed to like get myself together. And I did. Oh, yeah. So it was just this time of realizing I need to get myself together. I need to do something. And I was very lucky to have just, I don't know, the beginning of a community that was Black and brown, which is queer, which is just kind of holding a lot of space for that healing, and also kind of guiding me and telling me what to do. And a lot of people, you know, we were all healing and we were all learning, but I didn't know what the hell to do with myself. I needed, you know, these people I trusted, these friends to kind of push me in the right direction. And yeah, there was just so much support and so much important people that kind of like pushed me to connect to my ancestral magic. And that was something that I realized at that point of my disconnect with tarot, was that I think everybody is entitled to tarot, because its history is, you know, it's like there's so much documented history that's European and Italian and about the commercializing of the deck that came after the Tarot of Marseille and just all these very old decks. But before that, the same concept of like divination through cards or objects was happening in Asia and Egypt and all over the world. So like just kind of, you know, limiting tarot to like pagan tradition is racist and weird. So I always just thought, well, everybody, you know, we're all entitled to this kind of magic and to learn from it and to work with it. But I didn't know what my connection was because the history was so vast and it was so, it just felt like this universal tool, you know? But after, you know, this depression spiel of sadness, I realized that the disconnect came from not acknowledging my ancestral magic and connecting to things that I only could connect through family and through learning about my history. I'm Cuban American, and I grew up around a lot of Santeria and people who practice Santeria and people offering me just things that I can heal from or things that I should learn, and me rejecting it because I'm like, I'm a punk, I'm not gonna wear that, and just kind of, you know, being like, but just being negative and being aggressive about religion. But yeah, eventually, like during that time, this is about 2013 was kind of where it was like an ultimatum situation, where it was like, if I don't deeply connect to my ancestral magic and let it completely transform my life, my routine, my wellness routine, then I'm going to stay very sad forever. And it was very obvious to me that that's what was going on, that I like needed to stop being so dry about success and wellness and healing. Like it's like, why can't I see the magic in my work? Why can't I see, you know, the ways that I've healed people through my work, through like writing about sexual assault and queerness and all these things that are difficult to write about. I needed to acknowledge my work as a healer and not just a writer and an artist. And in order to do that, I just really needed to respect and honor my ancestors and ancestral magic that will enable me to hold on to those connections. And so that whole era happened as I was finishing the deck. So Michelle T noticed that like a lot of my drawings were becoming a lot more spiritual and including a lot more ancestral like imagery of different ancestral people, different ancestries, because all the people on the deck were of different backgrounds. So what I started doing was I would ask the people that I was photographing if they wanted any of their ancestral magic to be a part of their card. And some people said yes, some people said no. Some people like gave me these very literal things to do. And I loved that. Like, cause it's, you know, I was going to research the stuff I was going to draw, but I wasn't going to choose what, you know, deities I'm going to, you know, assign you in the art. It was really cool to be able to hear everybody's perspective. But because of that, it kind of became my deck. And it's not that Michelle T was really excited about the imagery, but I think that she also realized that I'm a writer too. And mm-hmm. and she, so it's like her, she had this whole, like, you know, plan and image for the deck. And I think that what happened was we just both realized that we had different roles in the creation or the involvement of like tarot culture and history. And then we parted ways, and it wasn't dramatic at all. It was fine. She took on the Guide to the Modern Tarot book. And, you know, it kind of became the vessel that she was going to continue with as far as a tarot project. It was this weird thing that, like, it even took me a minute to decide to write it. At first I was like, oh, who am I going to ask to write it? So I was thinking of, like, just particularly women of color who had read for me and, like, turned me out with amazing readings, who are all writers. But then I was kind of like, you know, I will illustrate their deck, but I think because the illustrations were already done, it became kind of hard for somebody to write about my drawings, because my drawings are just full of all this personal stuff, or all this you know, specific way of communicating things. Like a lot of the symbolism for wands, for example, I'm looking at the King of Swords card right now is sitting on a spread on my bed, and he's holding an electric power drill. So the character in this is representing swords, but there's no swords. It's a power drill. And I think that, like, a lot of people will read into that in a way that I don't want them to, or not notice it. This sign from the universe being like that, you have to write it. And so when I started writing it, because I was reading too. I had been reading for a couple years already at that point. This is about 2015, because it was just such a slow process of making the art, looking for publishers. Michelle couldn't find a publisher that wanted to, you know, create a deck that was so focused on revolution and queer resilience, but like really putting queer, Black and brown people to the front, putting folks with disabilities to the front. And it was just all these conversations that publishers did not want to deal with. And so it's interesting because this always happens where, like, whenever I do a project that nobody wants to deal with, it's always the most successful. And like, Spit and Passion, I remember nobody wanted it, but it was the first time Publishers Weekly gave me a really good review. And I was like, oh, well, that's what you get. Now Feminist Press gets to enjoy the Publishers Weekly review, which publishers apparently really love Publishers Weekly validation. So yeah, after the deck came out, I released it myself. The first pressing, I published it and did a Kickstarter. And between Kickstarter and pre-sales, I ended up making about $80,000. And then about $20,000 of that went to printing and distributing. So it kind of was like an advance, you know. It was kind of like, it was the same amount of money. And I think that, like, there's this capitalist, like, way of really just like valuing money that comes from a corporation versus money that you fundraise, like if it's demeaning to fundraise. But I just don't get it. I'm a Gemini, and then I recently learned that my Pisces in Midheaven also makes me not value money and not understand its value. Because it's like the value is what we can buy with it, like boats and cute furniture. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I just like have, so it's like, if you can make a boat and you can make the furniture, then the money doesn't matter. So who cares where the money comes from? But yeah, at the end of the day, obviously I'm very grateful for having sold all these decks and still selling them. And I feel very grateful that, like, the people care about my work, and, you know, even without the validation of a corporation. And and now the new pressing of the deck is on Silver Sprocket, who are another, they're like a punk rock, they're a comics publisher, but I still see them as a punk rock record label, because I'm a Cancer Moon. And a couple of years ago, maybe like 7 years ago or more, I don't know, it was like 10 years ago, record label at the time, before they were like a pretty big comics distributor and publisher, they had like this very small office on Valencia in San Francisco, and they had a laundry room, and the office was the basement of their house, but then there was this laundry room, and the laundry room had a futon, so that kind of became where I would stay for free every time I was in the Bay Area. So I just always associate them to, like, oh, they're my punk friends who always have given me a place to stay. And, like, now they are putting out my tarot deck. And, yeah, we have these, like, business discussions, and we discuss sales and royalties. And there's so much capitalism, because they're like a professional publisher. And people like people love comics, you know, and they put out so much unique, special work that is weird and not gonna be found in a lot of the more mainstream publishers. So yeah, I think that everything with the tarot deck has kind of stayed in line with everything I've done in the past. But it's been a journey. However, even though it's a tarot deck and it's for the people and it's not a memoir, I like making it was just this personal thing of, like, you know, depression and ancestral magic. And if I hadn't, I always look back and I'm like, if I hadn't gotten really depressed and I would have just finished the deck, it would have been like kind of basic and like not that special. The art would have been rushed. My art style changed a lot over those years. I learned about gel pens. My art will never be the same without gel pens. So yeah, I'm very, I think that all of the dramatic aspects of creating it were so necessary for me to become integrated as a person, as an artist, as you know, somebody who's healed from very dark depression. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. I love hearing your process. And your deck is so important because of, you know, it's interesting to hear the context. It's so important because of the representation of Black and brown femmes and, disabled folks and queers, and and divination work. There's a lot. I like what you're saying about the way that everything that you did that like people wouldn't sign off on in the beginning and they were like, they wouldn't stand behind is the stuff that really was successful in the end. Because I think that has to do a lot with like what you're saying about capitalism. And there's so many decks now that are like mass produced by these big publishers that are rushed and they're created by like older white people and they're trying to depict cultures that they have no idea anything about. And they're doing it really dismissive and oversimplified and offensive ways. So I just think your deck is such a gift to so many queers and BIPOC and disabled folks. And it's like a feminist. It's like, yeah, such a great like feminist deck. And I was thinking like, so I'm teaching tarot right now, and my perspective is really like revolutionary also because I come from like a punk background and now I'm like a small business owner, which is weird. Also, I have Cancer midheaven. So yeah, like shout out to not to water midheavens and not really understanding or appreciating money. But I think that like the Seven of Wands in your deck was one that we were talking about because the image is like this person, this femme who's in what looks like a protest that has like tear gas and riot cops, and she has like a circle of seven candles, like she's doing a ritual in the middle of this demonstration. And I feel like that's super applicable to these times, and it's just like a really interesting interpretation of that card.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been that way. It's weird to talk about like I appreciate, and I think it's very so important for things to become more global and for things to become more universal. But there's been, you know, we've been trying to create protection rituals against police violence for so many years. It's decades of police violence, and that just kind of like submits to slavery and submits to colonization and these ideas that were brought forward by slavery and colonization. And that's what the foundation of policing is. And so people have been protecting themselves from it for so long. And it's interesting how like there's so much information now explaining different kinds of protest and different kinds of tear gas, for example, when it's like, that's just part of being an activist.
Mm-hmm.
They've been tear gassing us forever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and yeah, it's important for all of humanity to know that cops have been tear gassing us with poison forever. And hopefully that stops. But yeah, it's like just now different states are banning tear gas, for example. And it's like, it takes so much for people to listen. It takes such an uprising for people to listen, which is so important and necessary. But it's also important to note and always acknowledge that it's taken so goddamn long and so many people have died because of how long it's taken. And so many people have, like, lost so much because of how long it's taken. And, like, yeah, it's like protests are always chemical warfare. It's really interesting. I'm glad that the wearing of masks is like this now. A lot of the people, at least that I saw marching around New York City, were wearing masks, unlike the people on St. Mark's who are going out to sit on the sidewalk and have lattes and talk. They're not wearing masks. So yeah, like there's this, it's like everyone should wear a mask to the protest because cops are going to fight back through chemical warfare. But also because there is a pandemic and we should all just keep wearing masks. So yeah, it's weird to be like very inspired and motivated to fight and to make stuff, to make ideas, you know, visible and shared. But it's also exhausting for every activist who has been trying to expose these things for so many years. And it's interesting how, like, you know, people just are going to keep fighting and are going to keep believing in themselves while growing. But the system is always, I don't know. I feel like we have just such a long way to go. It was interesting how the one of the cop cars that was on fire in New York was set on fire by two people who are lawyers. And they're, you know, young activists and, like, really cool people. But they're lawyers. And I'm like, oh, these are the people I was keying cop cars with in 2001 at the FTA protests, except they became lawyers. And, like, I became, you know, an artist. Like, we were back then. Like, we were always doing what we do, whether in whatever formation, whether it was joining, like, a legal defense collective or publishing a zine. I feel like it's so important to notice that, like, a lot of the people on the front lines whether it's, you know, protesting or creating art or, you know, starting conversations, hosting panels, hosting rallies. A lot of these people are just exhausted with saying the same fucking thing for so many years. But we're not going to stop because it's important for everybody to know. I'll never forget how, like, when Obama got elected and it was like, oh, we're not fighting a Republican conservative government anymore. A lot of people just kind of stayed comfortable and stopped fighting while there was still things happening. There was still illegal detention centers. There was still police brutality. But there was also this, like, facade of American justice, just because there wasn't these outward atrocities that we see, you know, Donald Trump perpetuating. So yeah, I'm like, there's always been rituals at the protest, protection rituals.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love that. And it is interesting right now. I mean, I'm sure this is a thing we could talk about for a long time, but, you know, just, yeah, the way that, like, when there's a liberal in office, people get really complicit, even though the same state sanctioned violence is happening. And yeah, like, during Obama, there were the most deportations, the prison industrial complex continued to thrive, police violence was still happening, but people that are white liberal people primarily were comfortable. So they weren't fighting. So thank you for bringing that up. And I just think, like, you know, it's interesting to hear about your friends that you were, like, keying cop cars with, like, 20 years ago, now became lawyers. And it's,
oh, but those are not specifically those, the people that yeah. Are lawyers that were arrested for the fire. I've never met them in my life. I'm just saying that, you know, the people that I fought with back then were studying to be lawyers. They were all practicing for the bar and we were all 20.
But
that's just all I'm saying is that I feel like protesters get this just kind of a this bad reputation when it's just completely inaccurate and not acknowledging the meaning of protest and the need for it, because, you know, obviously we can't change it from working from the inside and becoming lawyers. We have to keep demonstrating and having direct action.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for clarifying that it wasn't like the exact same people. I think more like it's interesting to like think back about who you were in community with and you're like early, and I'm like saying you're not like you specifically, but like the collective you, like thinking about who you were organizing with, who you were protesting with, who were in your affinity groups and your collectives, like when you were 20, and then what they're doing now. And it's interesting because like some folks decided to go and like work in the inside. Some people decided like, okay, the way that I want to do systemic change is to actually become a lawyer. And like, I know when I first learned cop watching and joined like a cop watch group, a lot of the people in that group were like in law school or they were like immigration lawyers. And then they would go to cop watch meetings and be like, so y'all, guess what? I'm an anarchist. But they're not going to go and say that, you know, when they're working in the system. And then some of us have chosen or have like our paths have led us, you know, like you being an artist, like I'm like a tarot reader and a podcast speaker and like an herbalist or whatever. So it's like, it's interesting to see like the progression. And then there are, you know, I don't know if you know, like the people that were really into punk and now they're kind of just like mainstream liberals too. So, you know, it's just interesting to see the way people's paths kind of change.
Yeah.
So how do you feel like, you know, and I guess like you've already gotten into this a little bit, but like, how do you think like your punk rock ethos, and I know you were saying like when you were young, you were sort of like feeling you wanted to reject your ancestral ties, but then when you when you were writing the tarot deck, like you can't, would you say that like during your Saturn return, like making this tarot deck, you like came back to your ancestral ties and like it kind of like found a way to merge that with like your punk rock ethos?
Yeah, or just kind of explain it, because I think that that the fact that punk arrived in my life when it did, and kind of saved me from so much isolation and pain and stress and sadness that like I healed through punk. It just kind of felt like this ancestral gift almost. And I did get a reading that where she was like, oh, you know, this spirit gave you punk. And it's not that now you have to let go of it. It's just that now it can't be more powerful than you. And I think that what changed during that time was that I wasn't living by the rules of a punk scene. I was living by the rules of, you know, the right side, what is the right side of history? And a lot of the time punk hasn't even been on the right side of history. It's been I was in a ska scene in Florida. Like everybody was really into like being colorblind and using colorblindedness as a way to combat racism, which I just thought was so dumb and wrong and like it needed a lot of conversations by punks of color and zines. And there's a zine called Slander and Race Riot written by Mimi Nguyen, which just kind of explained racism in punk during a time where nobody wanted to talk about it with anything aside from like, fuck Nazis, you know? And it's like, yeah, fuck off Nazis. But then what? Then what do we do when we're people of color trying to exist in a predominantly white male community? So these new conversations have to happen. And I think that like realizing that like punk was this very important part of like my identity and my past and my upbringing and my like salvation is very important. But like then it becomes so many different things. The way I interacted with punk 20 years ago was very different than I do now. Like I was more involved in the community. I lived in punk houses. I would set up punk shows and I was more about, it's like all my friends and I, we all like the same bands. And it was like, well, that is not my life anymore at all. And I like that I have a lot of different kinds of activists and different kinds of revolutionary people who don't just subscribe to punk. So I think that, like, limiting my identity and my social life and my the way I live to punk would just be kind of disrespectful to punk itself as, like, this thriving ideology and world that exists to create a haven or a safe place for people who are marginalized, for people who don't have anywhere else to go. And I know that punk is so popular, and there's a lot of people who get into punk to be cool. We call them posers. In the 90s, that's what we called them. But, like, yeah, I still believe that, like, despite posers, like, punk is should still be this like, refuge. And I'm not looking for that refuge anymore. I live in it. Like, I created this refuge through that involves so much different kinds of refuges, whether it's ancestral magic or punk or art or, you know, I think that, you know, I'm almost 40 and I love punk, and I just dyed my hair green. And every time I write a song and I'm like, oh, my style of music is going to change. This is going to be kind of flamenco-y. Or, like, look at this. I'm doing this, like, kind of cumbia thing. And then, like, I'll just play it a little bit faster, and I'll be like, no, it's pop punk. I can't help it. So, yeah, I think that, like, because I love punk and because I love the way that the music is executed, there's no way for me to get away from it, because it's just this deep part of my soul. But I think that it was very important for me to just feel integrated with all the parts of my soul, and have them integrate with each other and just kind of elevate each other. Because it's like, you know, there's a lot of punk that I don't understand or I can't be a part of, or I don't connect with it. Just like there's a lot of magic I don't connect with. I've been to so many, you know, botanicas where I want to talk, or I want to meet one of the people who organize it and see if they have any, like, gatherings or whatever. And then they'll still kind of work with a lot of homophobic or sexist rules and structure. So then I just have to go. You know, I'm not going to shame anyone or educate anyone. They'll learn the hard way. Like, I'm not going around giving a feminist lecture to, like, a small business run by older men who are kind of intimidating. And, you know, I just feel like I'm going to respect everybody's place and say what I need to say when it happens. Like, if I hear something sexist, I'm going to be like, well, that's fucked up, but I'm going to go. And, like, yeah, I think that there's a lot of, like, spaces where people practice whether magic or music or punk that, like, are gonna piss me off and not really like highlight the stuff I believe in as far as gender or as far as class, as far as racism. And, you know, it's like, how many times have I interacted with, like, a Latinx Santeria community that is really anti-black? And it's like, you motherfuckers are, like, working with African magic because of your ancestry, but for some reason you're giving more power to your Spanish ancestry because you have an anti-black structure of who you hire. And it's just so there's just so much tacky racist shit out there that, like, you just really, yeah, it's very important for me to just hold on to all my values all the time and not really let something shitty that I heard in punk or something shitty that I heard in magic to, like, influence me and kind of go backwards.
Yeah, thank you for sharing all that. That's amazing. And I love that you're bringing up evolution of a race riot and slander. And I remember another zine that, like, really changed my perspective was Quantify. There was a zine called Quantify. There was like a lot of zines about racism and punk that I read when I was in high school, and being like this rural white kid, it was like really expanding. And now I see that same thing happening to young people on Instagram. Like, I think like zines were like the thing that were this really DIY education tool against oppression that exists inside of communities, inside of like punk and radical communities. And now I think like Instagram has tried to replicate it, but it's just, it's fucking owned by Zuckerberg. It's not the same. It's just, it's like a different world. It's, everything's become heavily monetized. So that's like why I love connecting with people that have like long-term influences with zines as well. So do you have like, what are sort of your plans? Like, do you have plans for other, making other zines or like collaborations or releasing other projects?
Well, I'm always working on a big secret thing. And since I finished the tarot deck, I've been slowly kind of sculpting a graphic novel that I just read from the other day during this feminist press live stream event. And after reading it, and then as you know, the pandemic has progressed, as you know, there's an uprising forcing everybody to examine their anti-racism or their way they practice their supposed anti-racism. And so yeah, I feel like really inspired to finish. And it's the kind of thing where I could decide to finish in a week, not the art, the writing at least, and make a couple drawings and then try to see what happens. If a publisher wants to, pay me for me to finish it, and, you know, just kind of, I just want to like sit down. It's a dystopian graphic novel about, I don't want to talk about it. It's a secret. Okay. But maybe I'll read from it again, and it'll be a love story. It'll be about punk. It'll be about natural disasters. But it'll definitely be a memoir it'll definitely be autobiographical fiction, which it's just like nothing in the story is going to be something that has happened. Maybe just like the idea of it, like everybody in the band is not going to be based off of somebody that I've been in a band with. They're going to be based off of people that I would like to be in a band with, and people I invent. Like, you know, I really want it to just be fiction, but obvious enough that it's a little bit autobiographical, because the main character is going to be this Cuban woman who like writes songs. But it's going to take place in the future. So it's science fiction, dystopian science fiction. And the one project that I have been open about and posting about on the internet is the Rock and Roll Hall of Femme. And it's a painting series highlighting rock and roll icons and musicians and new bands and artists who have elevated femme identity and queerness in their music. Look, I feel like there's a couple people that I think of who like definitely brought femme normalcy, like the normalizing of like men in spandex, for example, that started it, but or that, you know, made a name for it. But I'm not gonna include them. Like, I'm not gonna include David Lee Roth. I'm sorry. Not sorry. There's just some people who participated in it, but didn't really like enable conversation on gender and sexuality because of catering to homophobia, in the scene, like the metal scene, and, sexism in the metal scene. And so, yeah, I really just want to focus on artists who are like, you know what, like I'm obviously, like, I don't know, just people who just really tie the femme presentation to queerness and to being against misogyny. And, you know, I'm drawing Little Richard and I am drawing future ones I'm drawing. There's a lot. There's going to be a lot of them. So far, I have the band Downtown Boys, Ainiko, Martine from Limprist, Green Day, Grace Jones, Little Richard I just started, and who I've drawn, Bad Cop, and there's going to be so many. And there's, you know, the next one, Polystyrene, Joan Jett. There'll be a lot, and I can't go through the list of them. But I'm kind of, I was kind of really eager to do a live, just like an art show for that. And I even have plans with a gallery, and like, I don't know, it was all very exciting. But then after the pandemic started, I just kind of put that to the side because I'm not really trying to host an art opening right now. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. My work also kind of fluctuates with the world. Mm-hmm. I just did this poster that I sold out of. I'm going to probably do another pressing, to donate more. But yeah, I ended up donating about like $4,000 to different organizations, four different organizations, who are working towards, supporting the Black community. One is the Trauma Healing Fund for Black folks, a Black Trans Protester Fund, which surplus funds go to all these different organizations, Black Visions Collective. Yeah, there's just a lot. There's just so much to give money to right now. And the drawing, I made this drawing recently that just kind of stopped everything else I was doing. So I could release it and print it, and it's an homage to the burning cop car, the burning cop van, which happened 10 blocks from my house, by people I have never met who seem really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait for your book. This is really exciting. And yeah, we're like at an hour, but is there anything you want to say like before we end the call? The interview?
I've said so much.
It's been awesome.
I just want everybody to stay on the right side of history and keep calling out your racist family members.
Fuck yeah.
Listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.